I'm Shane Clark from UMass, and I'm going to be talking about the security and privacy implications of energy proportional computing. And this is work done with Ben Ransford and Kevin Fu, who are both in the audience today. So to start with, I just want to take a second to define energy proportionality so that we're all on the same page here. To say that a device is energy proportional is to say that its power consumption scales closely with its workload. This is important because computers are becoming more energy proportional over time. In fact, energy efficiency, which is defined in computations per kilowatt hour, has been doubling every 1.5 years since 1946. And that empirical observation is known as Cumie's Law, named after Jonathan Cumie, who's over there. And there are a couple things to note about that. So first of all, that's a little faster than Moore's Law. So it's not just dependent on things like increased density. And it also predates not just the integrated circuit, but the transistor. So 1946 is vacuum tube computers. So this is a really long-standing trend that doesn't show any signs of stopping. The obvious question is, why do we care about energy proportionality in relation to security and privacy? It's because proportionality implies workload information in power consumption. And to illustrate that point, I have some measurements that I took with just a kilowatt, one of those little outlet power meters, on computers from three different eras. So the left bar here is a Pentium 1 120 megahertz desktop. And the blue portion of the bar is its idle power consumption, when it's booted up and just sitting there. And the green portion is the additional power consumption when I loaded its one and only CPU core with an infinite loop. And there's sort of a dynamic range there, right? So the green part is what you can affect with the workload, and it's really small on this old computer. It's like 20% of the total maximum power consumption possible. In the middle is a Core 2 Duo from a 2008 MacBook, which explains why the absolute power differences, or the absolute power is lower. But in this case, there are two cores, so they're green and yellow portions of the bar. Unfortunately, the yellow portion is not showing up great on this projector. I promise you that it's there. And if I load both of the cores, then the dynamic range for this computer is about 50% of the total power consumption. And finally, on the right is a pretty modern desktop machine. So that's a Core i5. It's a quad-core processor, and it has a discrete GPU. In the blue portion, coincidentally, the idle power consumption is pretty much identical to the Pentium 1, which I think is like a 1995-era machine. But the dynamic range is much, much bigger. It's at least 60% of the total power consumption. So as you do more things on these modern modular machines that can support parallel computations, you're getting more fine-grained information about what's happening just from the power consumption. And then there's the problem of how we get at this information via power consumption. So we use a technique that I usually just call whole system analysis. And there are a lot of things that people have done in the past to look at like power side channels. And if I want to measure a stack of MacBooks here, with their accompanying power adapter, there are lots of options, and I just want to sort of guide you to the approach that I took and why. So one thing that's sort of like traditional differential power analysis approach would be tear the MacBook apart, melt the packaging off the CPU with fuming nitric acid, and measure like individual wires with EM probes. But that's not what we want to do here. We don't want to be so invasive, and it's not the right approach for a general purpose computer. If it's a smart card where you're looking for a single shared key that might be in millions of devices, that's the right thing to do. But we don't think it's the right thing to do if you're just interested in understanding what the power consumption is doing in relation to the workload. If you want to stay outside of the computer, your next step might be to do something like this. So the closest you can get without opening the thing up is just solder a resistor in series on the DC side. This will show you all the power consumption over time. You can see some really surprisingly fine-grained information if you do this. So this is me just pressing and holding the A key in a text editor. And there are really obvious spikes when I first press the key, and then as the OS repeatedly processes the key and displays the character, and then when I stop. So you can already see a lot of information here, but we're really interested in getting a little further away even, because this is still an invasive thing where you're modifying the power supply and doing something pretty aggressive. And a little dangerous in the case of my soldering. So we want to take one step further back and look at the AC side. So we built this instrumented outlet, which on the back side looks a lot like what I did on the DC side. There's a resistor soldered in series to to measure the current consumption over time. And because you're dealing with noise from the power supply itself and you're measuring AC power, you get a much worse signal-to-noise ratio, and you can't see as much, but you can still see some things. So for example, if I navigate to our department's homepage, which coincidentally had a picture of me on it when I did this slide, you can still see changes in power consumption from this workload. So this is, you know, sort of obviously to the eye, not as distinct as the key presses, but you can still see changes. And while this is less invasive, I understand that it's still not a necessarily super compelling threat model in terms of accessibility. But if you think about it, how careful are you about the power that you look at? So this is a picture of the Pwn plug, which is a DARPA-funded research project. This is a pen testing power strip that has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi interfaces in it, and also includes an embedded Debian computer running Metasploit. So if all I need to get in there is a resistor and maybe a way to exfiltrate it, I think that it's at least as easy on the attack side. In using a device like this, you could measure more than just the few examples I had. So you could look at different web pages. This is google.com. And if you remember the one I showed you before, this actually looks different to the eye. And in fact, web pages do appear to be pretty unique in terms of power consumption. In some circumstances, you can still see things like key presses. So this is me typing a URL into the Google Chrome address bar. And because Chrome does all kinds of fancy things like DNS prefetching and search completion, there's a spike in CPU activity every time I press a key, and it's revealing more information than it would if I were just typing something into a terminal, where it's not obvious that there are key presses. You could also sort of turn the problem around and do something like create a covert channel. So this is actually an SOS in Morse code. There's three narrow blips followed by three wide blips, and that was just created with a Python script. Having looked at a few of the things that you could possibly find, we wanted to sort of zoom in and quantify how much information is there in certain cases. So as a starting point, we decided to stick with web pages. And using the instrumented outlet, we gathered about 8,000 traces of 50 different web pages. So this is, you know, at least 90 traces per web page, and we also did things like varying the conditions under which we measured it to test the limits of the classifier we built. We used half of these traces to train a support vector machine and test it on the other half, and found that we could identify an unlabeled page with 87% precision and 74% recall on average. And in fact, the SVM was actually resistant to some perturbations in the measurement condition. So if you're using a VPN, it makes almost no difference to the classification accuracy. If you switch from a wired to a wireless interface, it makes no apparent difference, really, in the classification accuracy. Other conditions, of course, were a little bit more problematic. So if I were to train on power traces from a desktop machine and test on a laptop, it won't work in its present form. You've overfit to the single machine you measured, so that would require a new approach. Here's the breakdown of the performance by page, just so you can get a feel for what the distribution looks like. And the big X is the mean precision recall. And clustered up in the top right, there are about 18 pages for which the classifier was almost perfect. And then there are a few outliers toward the bottom left, especially GoDaddy.com, which just worked terribly. And it's not entirely clear what the problems were with GoDaddy.com, but there are some likely culprits. So it loads big images dynamically. It includes a lot of JavaScript, including things with fast timers. And it's also served by a content distribution network. So those are all things that could have been part of the problem with classification for this page. There's a lot more material about the web page stuff in particular in a tech report on my web page if you're interested in it. But after quantifying this sort of attack style, we wanted to look at using power for good, right? Because as Uncle Ben said, with great power comes great responsibility, and we should use it wisely. So we got to thinking about embedded devices and the fact that there are a lot of embedded devices out there that are vulnerable to malware, but they're not protected by antivirus software. So two really big classes of devices like this are SCADA systems. If you think about things like Stuxnet or Flame, SCADA systems often don't run antivirus software because they're worried about things like determinism or resource consumption when they're running power grids, oil refineries, things like that. And medical devices, unfortunately, have somewhat similar concerns, but a big part of the problem with antivirus software on medical devices is that the manufacturers generally forbid customers from installing antivirus software. So they have not certified the system in that specific state, so they will void the warranty if consumers attempt to take steps to protect the device directly. And we were thinking that maybe we could use power analysis to detect malware on these classes of devices. And there are a couple observations that we think make this a pretty promising approach. So these are embedded devices with specific tasks. They might be running x86 hardware and commodity operating systems, but conceptually, they're only meant to do one or a few things. And if we could profile the intended uses, then maybe we can identify anomalies or malware after the fact with a whitelisting approach. So that would seem sort of silly on your laptop, for example, because you could be doing any number of things. But on these other devices, like, for example, a machine only meant to handle MRI images, it's much more feasible. And I have just one preliminary result that I'd like to talk about quickly. We happened to have a device much like this class of devices in our lab, and it was our oscilloscope, which I unfortunately destroyed in the process of gathering these results. But I took our oscilloscope, which was a Pentium 3 running Windows XP Service Pack 2, with the addition of some custom software and some custom hardware for analog sensing and things like that. And I profiled its power consumption when it was both sitting idle and measuring, you know, electrical signals, which I reasoned are essentially the only two things that you should be doing with a scope for the sake of demonstration. So here's the power consumption when it was just sitting idle. I then intentionally infected the oscilloscope with some malware. So I plugged it into the network, I went to some known bad URLs, and I let it run some EXEs. After that, the idle power consumption changed quite a bit. And it's sort of blindingly obvious in this case that something is wrong. And while this seems maybe too good to be true as an example, if you think about it, malware has a tendency to produce things like this. So it's really common to want to log user keystrokes, for example, take screenshots in the case of some more advanced malware, try to contact a command and control server or join an IRC channel. So there's lots of periodic activity that you might see. And while it might not produce enough of a load on the computer to alert the user just using it, it will show up in the power consumption in a lot of cases, we think. And this is something that we're going to keep working on. I want to talk just briefly about some future work. So one of the things that people bring up a lot is that, oh, but you have to instrument the outlet, and it's a pain, and it doesn't really seem that realistic. But there are options to measure from further away. So a first step would be to use something like a Hall effect sensor, where you don't need to be in series. You don't need to be part of the circuit. You inductively couple, and you can just put it close to the wire you want to measure. A step further would be to use an approach similar to the ElectroSense system. And a similar measurement technique was also used by Enev et al. I hope I said his name right, but I probably didn't. At CCS last year, to do classification of video signals on TVs. So in conclusion, computers are increasingly energy proportional devices. And as they become more energy proportional, they will leak more information about their workloads via power consumption. And whole system AC power analysis has malicious and constructive uses that you can realize today. And those promise only to improve in the future. Thank you.